Right, welcome back. Part two. It's been brilliant so far. We're going straight in with testosterone. This is the biggest subject. Yeah. And it's quite a buzzword at the moment, isn't it? Something that I really want to know some more about. You mentioned earlier that it was available locally in our area, yeah. which is Gloucestershire, which is fantastic to know. I know that's not the same all round. We've yeah. talked about this postcode lottery. But let's just talk about testosterone and the play that it has in women's health during and after menopause, and when should it be considered?
So I think, you know, not everybody needs testosterone. So actually, if you're feeling great and everything's working on estrogen and with progesterone, if you need progesterone, then don't feel like you've got to have testosterone. But there are definitely times where testosterone can be really helpful, and there are definitely cohorts of women that I really think should be being proactively offered it. So women who have had what we call a surgical menopause, so women have had a hysterectomy,
yeah.
They absolutely should be being thought about it, especially if they're having it when they're quite young as well with it. Even if the ovaries have been left behind, we know that because of the way the surgery can affect sort of blood supply to that area, the ovaries will sometimes stop working as effectively much earlier than it would have done if they hadn't had surgery. So I think if you've got somebody in that situation, it's really important to think about whether they need testosterone. I think we're still learning more about testosterone. There's more studies happening about testosterone. As I said, British Menopause Society just talks about it primarily for the moment around libido. But I think that as we get more data and we get more information, I think we're going to be thinking about it a lot more, because we know realistically that testosterone is an important hormone in things like our muscle and bone health, probably around cognition as well. So, our kind of this kind of brain fog and things that we're thinking about. So I think as we get more information and more studies and things are done, like you said, for men, if we were men, the studies would have already been done, wouldn't we? And yeah. we'd have the solution.
Yeah.
But it's trying to access that evidence base with it. Also with testosterone, thinking about other people who've had early menopause, so it may be if you've had radiotherapy or you've had to have, sometimes chemotherapy can do it as well. Sometimes as well, there are women that have maybe been put into a menopause if they've got really bad endometriosis and they've basically been given medication to switch off all their ovaries and things. Again, they can really struggle. So it's thinking about with them HRT earlier to help protect their bone and their heart health particularly. But I think the testosterone, it's, I think what I was saying to you, when I prescribe it to women, I always say to them it's about a 50% hit rate. So I will have 50% of the women come back and say, this is a game changer, I want to stay on it. Other 50% that come back and say it hasn't really done what I thought it was going to do. So I think I'm always really honest with women and say this may or may not help, depending on what we're looking to address. It's really important that you address the other issues around it. So there's no point having testosterone if you've got loads of vulval dryness or pain during intercourse, can't orgasm. You know, it doesn't matter how much that drive is there to have sex with the testosterone. If it's not comfortable, your brain is going to protect you, and why would you want to do it?
Yeah.
If something isn't worth your time and effort, you're not going to want to do it. And again, you know, addressing sort of relationships and things like that to make sure that that person is pulling their weight within the relationship, and that you are feeling, you know, important to them as well, because, you know, that's one of the things, isn't it? In the beginning of a relationship, it's exciting. You have got their undivided attention, you know, you feel really connected and things to them. So trying to make sure that you're addressing that in the relationship. So with testosterone, I normally say to women to do a 6-month trial. So you need to have blood tests done beforehand just to check what your base levels of testosterone are like. Not because it always correlates with how you feel, but to know that we're not starting from a point of too much testosterone, because if we then give you testosterone into it, you could end up with some side effects with it. You have a blood test 3 months later, and then again 6 months later. And if you decide to stay on it, then you must have an annual blood test. The level of testosterone we're using in women shouldn't be causing big side effects, although I always have to say to women this could happen, and also to say to them why I don't want them bathing themselves in it, yeah. because, you know, they must have the dose that's prescribed, and that's why we must do the monitoring. So we do say that you can have hair loss on your head, so that kind of frontal kind of pattern hair loss. Voice can go deeper and that may not come back, and increased risk of sometimes with body hair, depending on where you're putting it. They talk about clitoral enlargement. I've never ever seen that in a woman. And again, I think these doses that we're giving women are really small doses. The downside at the moment in the UK is that we have still not got a testosterone product that is licensed for women that is prescribable on the NHS. It is coming. There's a product called Androfem, which is, I think it was came originally from Australia, that the MHRA has now approved, and we're just waiting for it to be able to come onto formulary. And that is designed for women. It's testosterone given in a way that is easy for us to dose and to be able to use. So testosterone generally we have in a gel format at the moment, and you might be given a pump gel or you might be given sachets. So what the one I often use is a sachet that you have to make the sachet last 8 days. So it's really tricky to think, how much am I going to do? And it's a little bit of a trial and error thing. So it would be great if we have got a product in the future that is going to be a more measured dose. The same way like we've got with our estrogen and things. Yeah. It will make it a lot easier. So I think I always say to women, don't judge it until you've been on it for 6 months. Address some of the other things that are going on. If it helps, brilliant. If it's not helping, then not to take it. But I think there is more space to come. And I think in 5 years' time, if we're talking about testosterone, I think there's going to be a lot more information and evidence and things around it. And there's some studies being done with people with ADHD, both men and women, and how they are with testosterone and things, so, and about their kind of cognition and sort of brain functions. So that's quite interesting, I think, to see what's going to happen kind of with that. And I think it may be advantageous for us, but you know, the testosterone space for men is now opening up, and so probably there will now be some more kind of research and things kind of coming out. And you know, we are not little men, we are women, and our physiology is different, but I think hopefully it's going to open up that conversation that more stuff will be done, and we'll be thinking about testosterone in this way, and where it can help. And I think, you know, this line from the British Menopause Society about just for libido, you know, they have to be safe, they have to go on the evidence that they've got, and maybe as we get more evidence, things will change. But if you have testosterone, you do need to think about already making sure you've got enough estrogen. So
okay, that was the next question, actually. So how do we, what is the best way of knowing, without doing sort of like a bioidentical type scenario, what is the best, most accessible way of a woman finding out where she's at and what she needs? Because this, I think, is the million-dollar question.
Yeah.
You know, how do I know what I need?
And I think it's really hard. I think we don't necessarily always know the answers to this, especially in perimenopause, where we're getting big fluctuations depending on what's happening in our own cycle with the estrogen. So if you have testosterone without estrogen, your body will just turn quite a bit of it into estrogen. So you're not getting the full benefit of the testosterone, and it's a really inefficient way to make the estrogen. So I normally would say start with estrogen and let's see where you are at. If we give you estrogen and you've got a womb, you must have the progesterone because we must protect the lining of your womb. If you have estrogen without it, there's a risk of womb cancer. So that's why it's really important that women have their progesterone. And women sometimes don't like taking progesterone, or they forget to take it. And I say to them, this is why it's so important. Because if you don't understand why it's important, you don't understand why it's important to remember it. So it's really important to make women understand, you know, why we're giving that to them. Then I think depending on what your symptoms are, that would help for us to think, are you getting enough estrogen? And if you're starting to get up to a fairly good dose of estrogen, you know, for you on your gel, if you said to me, I'm on 3 or 4 pumps, my flushes have gone, you know, some of my other symptoms are better, but it now feels a bit more like fine tuning, you know, with libido and things like that. We've addressed, you know, vaginal estrogen, things like that. Then I think at that point, it definitely is worth thinking about adding in the testosterone and sort of checking the levels. We do check estrogen levels sometimes at that point, but again, you have to take it a little bit with a pinch of salt, because sometimes I get a woman, the level is really high, but then when I look at where they were in their cycle, they've just ovulated, so you get a spike in their estrogen. So you have to take it into context. But also, sometimes women come in and they're on mega doses of estrogen, and actually there is the opposite effect, where actually loads of estrogen can make you feel quite crap as well.
Yeah.
So sometimes it is actually people feel better when we sometimes drop their estrogen down a bit if they're having lots and lots of estrogen. But I think, again, we're still kind of learning about how to measure these hormones and what are accurate and how that then correlates to symptoms. And that's why it's really important to treat the woman, not
what
just the
numbers.
What happens
with somebody who's got the coil, like myself, that doesn't have a cycle?
Yeah.
Because I can tell by my mood sometimes.
Yes, there will be a cycle happening in the
background.
There's
definitely something going on. So I can tell, you know, I'm obviously a little bit more irritable, or I'm more tired, or I'm really sugary hungry, or, you know, those type of things. I don't actually have any type of cycle anymore because of this.
Yeah.
So how then can I say, right, this is this is my last cycle, because I honestly wouldn't really have a clue about my luteal phase or any. I wouldn't.
No.
Not anymore. I haven't had a period probably in 12 years.
Yeah.
Not properly.
Yeah.
So how do we manage that then?
So I think it probably is looking at when you, if we took like an average month, looking at when your symptoms are, when you're getting them, what are the symptoms, looking at how much estrogen you're on, are you on a good dose already? If we check your levels, you know, is there room for maneuver with your testosterone? Do we think about adding that in? Are all your other vitamins okay? Have you got enough iron? Have you got enough vitamin D? You know, all those other things that are kind of coming into play. I think there is, I wonder if in the future there is going to be a bit more kind of intuitive dosing, where we may even change the dose of your estrogen during your cycle, mm-hmm. depending on how you are, you know, especially as women are starting HRT earlier in the perimenopause journey. And we do use HRT sometimes with premenstrual syndrome, so that's not a new concept. I think it's quite interesting to see where things are going to go in the next sort of 5 to 10 years. But for, I think for the information we've got at the moment, I think it's about making sure that you've got enough estrogen in your cycle overall, and then looking at your other levels to make sure that they are okay. So other vitamin levels, thyroid being okay, looking at your lifestyle things, and then whether we think about testosterone, you know, with libido and things like that as well.
I just think it's important to be able to give the listeners that information, so that when they go to the doctor, they're able to give as much concise information about where they are, and then make a decision from there forward, isn't it? Yeah. I didn't know that. Yeah. I didn't know any of this at all.
And sometimes women get really angry and they say, my GP's useless, they won't check my hormone levels, and they're 48, they've got loads of symptoms. Like, if you're playing perimenopause bingo, they would have house. And I say to them, that's okay, I don't think you need them, because it's not going to change what we're going to do. And actually, how are you going to feel if you get told your hormone levels are normal? You're going to be like, well, they're clearly not, because I don't feel normal.
And I've had that, actually. Yeah. Like, oh yeah, you're fine. I was like, I'm
really
not
fine. Yeah, and Dave was saying, no, she's not fine.
Shove something on her now.
So that's why it's really important to treat the person in front of you, because I think we just haven't got the ability yet to do that. And I think that, again, talking about this kind of women kind of whitewashing and vulnerability, you can pay a lot of money for very detailed hormonal testing, but I'm not always sure that it's necessarily going to correlate to then what you're getting and what you need. So
also to another question to do with dosing between estrogen and progesterone, mm-hmm. like you said, is very important because of womb cancer and protecting the lining and so on. With the coil, after sort of 5 years, the contraceptive side starts to dip, the progesterone levels drop, don't they? And contraceptive can last up to about 7 years, am I right?
So it's 8 years, or if you have it fitted over the age of 45, it can take you through to age 55 from a contraception point of view.
That's incredible. I didn't know that. I've got one in there. That's bonkers. I don't really need that. Dave's unacceptable. But
so for you, because you're having it for your HRT, it must be changed at 5 years. So that's why it's important that, always when I fit a coil on a lady for contraception, I say, if in the future we're using it for HRT, you must know that the rules change and that you must have it changed in 5 years. But actually, you know, if someone comes and they say to me, I've got really horrific periods, I'm flooding every month, I'm iron deficient, I'm, you know, having a 3-week cycle, so literally I'm bleeding for 10 days, having 10 days off, and then it starts again, the Marine is a really good option for them. Because
it saved me, because I had endometriosis.
And endometriosis is another...
It saved
really,
me.
Really, really helpful.
And that's why I've had it for so long. Honestly, ladies, if you haven't considered it, I know a lot of people don't like the idea of it, but oh my God, it changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I spent 2 weeks of the month walking on tiptoes. Yeah. I was in so much pain. Yeah. The flooding was horrendous, and it really has been, it was the worst time of my life, I think. So scared to go out the door in case, like, you stand up and you're covered.
Yeah.
It's horrendous, absolutely debilitating. And then the coil, who knew this? I did have an operation to clear off of the endometriosis at the same time, but the coil kept everything at bay.
Yeah.
So, you know, that, and I think that's really helped me.
Yeah, and I think the other time when it can be really helpful is if you've got somebody, and this is why we've got to individualise the treatment, you know, for someone, you know, what's their medical history, have they got endometriosis, have they got PMS? So actually, if you've got quite bad PMS symptoms, the Marine Coil or giving you the progesterone in a low dose continuously is really, really helpful, because it's helping to minimise those fluctuations. And with PMS, what we sometimes do is we use something like the Marina Coil, and then we add back in estrogen to try and stop you ovulating so that you're not getting those fluctuations. conversations, and that can be really, really helpful. And like we said earlier, quite often women are in that kind of PMS phase and then transitions into perimenopause, and so looking at how to sort of even out that cycle during the month can be really helpful. There's also a new progesterone only pill called Slynd, which is newer on the market, which again has been a bit of a game changer, and actually is quite a good option if a woman doesn't want to have a marina coil, but she doesn't want to go back to having periods, or her periods are awful, or there's a PMS element that we want to try and sort of switch off the ovulation. That seems to be much better at switching off ovulation, and especially if we then combine it with the estrogen being added back in. So that has been a big game changer for women who don't want to have a coil, have something like the marina coil. So yeah. Again, there's a lot more kind of choice around at the moment. There's another new progesterone tablet out called Navli, which again, I think is a really useful option to have in our formulary to be able to use with women, because different progesterones have got different side effects. They've got risks and benefits. Like, some women love the body identical progesterone we were talking about that makes you feel sleepy. Other people are like, oh, it's awful, I can't function the next day, I'm so over sedated. So, you know, it's about finding the right one for them, looking at their family history and their risk factors, you know, for things like, you know, breast cancer or heart disease, and finding the right one for them. And, you know, the Marina, I think, I always say to women, I fit a lot of Marinas. I don't tend to take many out. If I take it out, it's because we're putting a new one
That's
in.
Right.
So
yeah,
when it works, it's brilliant. And for someone like you with the endometriosis and with awful periods, it's huge. And I think it's revolutionized, you know, our parents' generation would have been having hysterectomies in their 30s and 40s, mm-hmm. wouldn't they? Because we didn't have anything else better for these awful, awful periods in endometriosis.
That was going to be
the next step.
Yeah, it was. And it was discussed. And I was like, yeah, just take it all out. And the consultant at the time, I really didn't rate her. I thought she was pretty unhelpful, but actually she was so right, and I thank her every day for taking it room away from me at the time, because I underestimated what menopause looked like, and it does throw you into menopause. You know, I've got a friend that had her womb removed for exactly the same reasons at 37, and they gave her nothing, and she had it done privately. They gave her nothing. No hormone replacement therapy whatsoever. She just went cold turkey.
Oh my god.
How she came out of it sane, I don't know. Mm. I honestly don't know. But it really does. There are options, but why these conversations are so important.
I think we are getting better. I mean, you know, 9 times out of 10, someone is discharged on HRT if they've had to have a hysterectomy. I think we're probably still not so good at asking about the testosterone if we've taken the ovaries away.
I think probably because we don't see that as an option, do we? It's not something that we're offered.
As clinicians, we should be thinking about it. As doctors, we should be thinking, okay, this woman's had a hysterectomy, no womb, no ovaries.
Right.
What's she going to be missing? You know, what's she going to need? And particularly if she's, you know, very young with it. Because testosterone, half of our testosterone is made in our ovaries. So if you take the ovaries out, that's going to leave a deficit, isn't it? And that's going to have an impact on how you're feeling. And I think, you know,
that's the definition of girl math, isn't it? Oh my god, that's where it's come from.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
So it's, you know, I think this is why it's really important that we have to look at the women as an individual and manage things holistically and look at everything that is going on with them, and not just shoving them on a one size fits all standard dose of you know, this is the regime you need, because this is the only one I know, and this is what I'm going to prescribe you. It's being able to go through, and sometimes when I give women choices, it's almost like, oh gosh, there's a lot of choice here. And sometimes it is then trying to narrow it down. So normally what we do is we'd be like, right, what is an absolute no? What have I mentioned to you? And you said absolutely no way, like, I don't want that. And then we can park that and then strip it down and then work it out. But also I say to women, you know, actually, if we start you on this HRT, you're not committing to it forever. If it doesn't work for you, we swap it.
No, that's right. And that's
don't be afraid to do that.
Exactly. That's why that's good to know as well. I think the Marina coil, even that is replaceable.
Yeah,
isn't
exactly.
It?
Yeah,
that can be removed very easily. So, you know, if you've tried it and that isn't for you, I know it's not ideal, but yeah, there are other options, right?
The other thing I would say as well is I always say to women, if you've had a Marina coil without estrogen, it is a completely different beast when you have it as part of an HRT package. So I had a Marina before I had my daughter. It was awful, awful acne on it. I just felt a bit meh. It was fine, but meh. And then, so I was really nervous about having a Marina coil fitted again after I'd had Heidi, but actually I've now got one, and with the estrogen my skin is fine.
Yeah.
And it's a completely different game, and actually, you know, hallelujah, no periods. So,
absolutely.
So I think you know, if and that's why it's important, I think, when we do the history with a woman, is we look at like what have they had, not just from an HRT point of view, but what have they had historically from a contraception point of view, and where have the pinch points been, and then sort of thinking about how we're going to tailor that HRT for them to that's going to give them the best chance. Because yes, we can change it, but if I can get it right first time, I'll try my best, you know, for you, sort of thing.
Oh, I know, you are brilliant, and I wish there was like a million of you, because women, we would have a lot of happy women, Nikki. We would. I'm lucky, I know.
Happy, happy wife, happy life.
Yes, that's what I tell my husband all the time. Not that he takes any notice.
And there's lots of me out there that are, you know, have got really good knowledge, and it's just, you know, trying to connect patients with these women. And, you know, it is a challenge in an NHS setting to have the time. And a lot of us working in NHS settings, we just run very, very late. Do you know what I mean? And we just have to. And I think, you know, one of the resources that we can share within the QR code is that I've created a form that women can fill out to take with them, so that you have got all the information there that you
That's
can hand
fantastic.
To the GP to make the life much easier for the GP. It also means that when they're saying to you, when was your last period, you've got it there, you know what the symptoms are. And because sometimes you, I mean, I get nervous going to the GP about my own stuff, and I get nervous, I sit in the waiting room and rehearse what I'm going to tell her. So actually, if you've written it all down in a way that is kind of organised and with the relevant information, I think it means that the consultation for you is much more productive. You get to talk about everything that you're worried about, but the GP is making it a really efficient appointment for them. So that, and it's only an A4 sheet, so it's not loads and loads of stuff. It's not particularly labour intensive to fill out, but I think it will hopefully really help women and the doctor seeing them. And that's why I have done a couple of these kind of menopause education events with Joan, the physio, does the holistic core, because actually if I can do some of the legwork before you go and see your GP, that you're going in already with an idea of the kind of risks and the benefits and the options, it's going to make it a lot easier for that GP. They're not starting from a baseline knowledge of zero. You know, you already have hopefully got pretty good knowledge about what's happening in your body, what your options are, and maybe are you thinking already about what you might like to try with it. So try and get the most out of it.
And that's exactly my point. I wish I'd have had that 5 or 6 years ago, where I could have gone in and gone, right,
this
then I would have got, I would have definitely started off my menopause journey in a completely different way. And that's why something like this is so important. So to summarise, let's go through some of the things that are really important to help support yourself.
Yeah.
And then we can talk about what it is that you offer and how that is helpful and where they can go to get all these different things. So let's start with, you know, how can we support being more resilient with it and, you know, our personal well-being during the transition?
Yeah.
Like, what's your key points?
So don't try and be superwoman. I think sometimes as women, we are a bit martyr-like, aren't we? And we think, oh, for God's sake, if it needs to be done properly, I may as well just do it myself, sort of thing. But actually, you know, make those shortcuts. Delegate what you can. Actually, if you can do an online shop as opposed to having to walk around Sainsbury's, do an online shop. If you can outsource your ironing, outsource the ironing.
Tick both those boxes, definitely.
You know, have a cleaner if you can. Get your partner to step up. Get your kids, if they're old enough, to step up. Don't give yourself a hard time if you have a bad day, because none of us are perfect. And, you know, the same way that you would be compassionate to a friend if they, you know, had a meltdown, you know, you wouldn't go to them, pull yourself together, would you? Be like, it's really hard, it's because you've not slept, you've got a lot on your plate at the moment. You know, it's to show that same compassion to ourselves, not to feel that self-care is selfish. So, you know, value yourself with the gym or, you know, working, you know, with a trainer or attending classes. Try and get outside. We spend so much time inside, and that being outside is so important. I know we've talked about that before. It has a big impact on your diurnal rhythm, which is, you know, what helps us to make us sleep. Really try and prioritize that sleep, so that you're getting enough sleep and you're working on kind of your sleep hygiene and those kind of hacks for sleep. The British Menopause Society have actually come out and talked about sleep in itself and how important it is. That just shows you how valuable it is. And they've talked about the options. So obviously starting with your basics, your sleep hygiene. There is a particular type of CBT, that your cognitive behavioral therapy, purely for insomnia and for insomnia menopause. So that can be helpful as well. Magnesium glycinate can be helpful. We sometimes use melatonin, which melatonin is a natural sleep hormone, and for some of us we don't maybe have enough of it, or we're not sensitive to it, so that can be really helpful as well. So there are things out there that can help with sleep, but there's no point having melatonin and still working on your work laptop in bed till 11 o'clock at night. You know, we have to have to do that, those other things. So I think really prioritizing that self-care, making time for friendship, so having that connection, having that laughter, making time for, you know, a relationship, if you've got a partner. You know, we talk about how as partners it can become very transactional, so you have this relationship where it becomes very much like, oh, you're going to pick up the kids, you're going here, have you walked the dog, da, da, da. It all becomes very kind of business-like, doesn't it? And it's very kind of just adult to adult. Or you might have a man child at home where you feel that you are maybe parenting your third child if you've already got kids, and actually you then are in that parent role and they're in a child role, and that's not sexy. No one wants to have sex with their child, you know. So actually to bring them out of that child role by, you know, getting them to step up or talking to them about their the way that they behave in the relationship, but actually then tapping into your child to child time. You know, when was the last time that you guys went and did something fun together? You know, what are the hobbies that you like to do? Is it a hobby that you both like? Can you do it together? And that might be doing something that you guys used to do when you first got together, but you don't do anymore. It might be something new that you've discovered. You know, you go on lots of holidays, don't you? And you're like me, we really value those holidays. Yeah. And actually that's a really nice time to sort of connect. But also to make that person that you're with know that they are important to you, but also for you to know that you're important to them and that they are listening to you, that they are seeing you, is so important for you then, how you feel in yourself and that self-esteem.
I think from a relationship's perspective, actually, that time is invaluable, because, you know, your kids grow up, mine are 24 and 20 now, so, you know, Dave and I are on our own a lot, and we've started holidaying a lot on our own as well. But actually, I think that really has improved our relationship and brought us closer together and realised that we do still get on all right.
Yeah, he's quite funny.
Yeah, I'll keep him. He's all right. And vice versa, I think. So, yeah, you're right. I do. But that actually does affect your everyday as well. You know, if you feel more connected to them and them to you, you're going to work more as a team, aren't you? Which is going to take that pressure off you a little bit. So
absolutely,
some of this isn't medical.
Yeah.
Some of this is lifestyle, isn't it? And I think that's really important that you've brought that up too, because it isn't, the estrogen, progesterone, testosterone isn't going to fix everything. Okay, a bit like you said about the testosterone earlier, you know, if your husband's a tosser, then the testosterone
still going to
be a tosser.
Yeah.
You know, so actually it is, you know, it is so important to address a multiple amount of things, and maybe, you know, writing a list down of things that you value as well as, you know, the medical things that can then supplement that too, are important. So I'm glad you said that, because it's true, actually. Yeah. You know, you have to go through a series of lifestyle stuff too, don't you?
And I think grow your tribe, you know,
having
friends that are like going through it and that can be your you know, who you can vent to and things like that is so important. And, you know, I feel really lucky with mine, and, you know, I think to know that you're not alone in this, it's not because you're doing anything wrong that you're struggling at work or you're feeling overwhelmed or you're not sleeping. You know, this is just kind of part of this stage that we're in, and then it's looking at how can we improve it, and, you know, where are the hacks and the quick wins, and, you know, what can I access, you know, medically that's going to make a difference, but, you know, what else can I do? So I think, yeah, don't be afraid to ask for help, show self-compassion, prioritize yourself. Self-care looks different for lots of people. It might be going to have a massage kind of every fortnight. It might be going having your nails done. But if you can do something that has got a physical win for you, being outside, being active, you know, fueling, eating food that really nourishes you as well. Again, like sometimes I think when we're really busy and we're rushing here and there is that tendency just to eat kind of quite processed stuff or not to have a proper meal. But if you can kind of get some time and some headspace to do some batch cooking or to do some planning, we use meal boxes quite a lot. I don't know if you've ever used them.
Yeah, we have. But I love to cook now.
So
for me, it's, you know, I get such satisfaction.
And that's because that's probably a bit of kind of self-care.
And it is definitely, honestly, it's my switch off time. The podcast goes on. Yeah. or the music goes on, I'm in the kitchen and I will cook for the week. Yeah. And then I can come home from work and it's good
done.
To go.
It's done.
But also I know it's good stuff too. Yeah, so I know I'm fueling myself.
You want to eat good stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, so we've tried a couple of the different food ones. I think my favourite is probably Green Chef or Mindful Chef because it tends to be...
I've just put Paige on Green Chef.
Yeah, so it's really good quality food. The recipes are really tasty. They're really easy. My husband loves him. He's getting better, but he lived at home and then he was in the Navy and then we moved in together. So he's never really had, when we first met, ever really had to learn how to follow a recipe or cook or anything. So bless him, he can do a mean spag bol and he can do beans on toast or omelette and stuff like that. But if he's got a recipe to follow, he's really good. And if I'm stuck, you
it
know,
teaches
working,
you to cook
yeah,
though as well,
so good.
It?
And we eat things we never ever would have even bothered to try. And you can get a bit stuck in a rut, can't you, of always eating the same thing. So he's brilliant now, and having that, I'll say to him, you know, pick whichever recipe you want to have tonight. I don't mind. I think they're all going to taste good, and I'll come down and he'll have started it or it'll be made, it's done. And I think for him it's really easy, he can follow it, and I know that we're getting really good food. So I think I don't think it costs us that much more money.
No, I think it's cheaper.
Because actually you end up throwing away a lot of food.
You do.
Like if you for a recipe you need like half a pot of yogurt. If you haven't eaten the rest of that yogurt, you know, in time, you bin it and stuff, don't you? So everything comes sort of portion, so it is easier. I think there are other ones that I wasn't as keen on, but I think Green Chef and Mindful Chef were my two favorite, and they often have got deals, so definitely have a look.
Well, Paige and I were talking about it for her to sort of try and eat as best as she can right now, and I ended up with a free box because of it, you know, and I love the food, it was great. So, but I can cook and I like to plan my meals myself. But if you don't, it's so good. And you can choose, like, if you want high protein, high fibre, low calorie.
There's an option
for everybody. So, all of these things factor into eating yourself better as well. Yeah. There is such a thing, isn't there?
Food is the most powerful medicine, absolutely. Yeah. And I think the more medicine I do, the longer I'm a doctor, the less drugs I want to prescribe.
Yeah.
Almost, because I think actually... you know, I give you a medication, but then it's got a side effect. And then, you know, sometimes, especially you see older people and they are on like 20 different drugs. And when you start kind of de-prescribing, actually a lot of the time they feel better. You know, some of the side effects from it. And some medications are really important and we wouldn't want them to stop it. But I think, you know, a lot of times with lifestyle changes, you know, I end up saying to people, your blood pressure has really improved. We can stop your blood pressure medication, or your diabetes has gone into remission, we can reduce your diabetes medication, or you've not got heartburn anymore, we can stop your omeprazole. So, you know, the lifestyle bit has got a massive impact. And we're in the situation, aren't we, where we've got this amazing medical knowledge and access to lots and lots of drugs, that we're living longer, but I don't always think we're living healthier. And that actually there's still a lot of kind of chronic disease and multimorbidities, and I do worry about, are we going to end up in a situation where actually our life expectancy is going to drop because actually we're becoming so unhealthy as a population. And that's not a blame thing, that's because of the problems with these big food corporations and the ultra processed food, the way that we're living, the fact that we're not supported, we're not being empowered, you know, with work-life balance. You know, it's not our fault on an individual level, things have to change on a kind of population and on a global level, really. So
I refer back to Leah again in series one, and if you haven't taken a listen, definitely go back and listen to Leah, because she is very much about, you know, eating yourself well. And the best nutrients will come from the food that we grow.
Absolutely.
You know, and it will be better than any supplement.
Yeah.
So, which is true, isn't it?
100%. Yeah.
And I really check myself on that often, because, you know, I had 20 different supplements and she did me a bit of an audit and she was like, why?
Yeah.
Why? I was like,
on TikTok.
Yeah. I said, well, I don't see it out in the sense. So I thought I'd probably need that. She was like, no, that can go. And she just literally binned probably...
Yeah.
I'd say probably 19 of the 20 that I had.
I think,
then you referred me to a multivitamin, which has been the game changer, I have to say. So it is crazy. And I eat well. So why am I doing that to myself?
Yeah, and
know?
This is this whole kind of, you know, having expensive wee. I think we said, if you're going to do anything, it's vitamin D, because that's the hard one to get from diet alone. But yeah, a lot of the other stuff is just expensive urine. And I think we're so desperate, aren't we, to feel better, that we are just sort of, try and hear then everything. And you know what works for one person, like that, that's talking to somebody who tried creatine because somebody had recommended to it and they'd find it really, really amazing, and she said it's given me awful headaches, so I stopped taking it. So you know, actually what
I can't
works for
take
one...
it. I love it. I think the benefits of creatine are out there, but it bloats me horrendously. And the water weight with it is worse than not getting the muscle gain.
Yes. So it's that trade-off,
so
isn't
I'm like
it?
Yeah, nope, that's gotta go. Yeah. It's checking if it's going to work for you, right, isn't it? Same with progesterone, same with estrogen and so on. So let's talk about, to finish, what it is that you can offer in your clinic, all the things that you do, because you know I'm booking in. But I want people to be able to access what you do.
Okay. So I work with the Female Health Doctor Clinic, and it's a really lovely place to work, a really lovely, kind, supportive team of all other doctors that are really passionate about women's health. Obviously, today we spoke about menopause, but we do everything. So we can look at things like polycystic ovary syndrome, premenstrual dysphoria, PMS, endometriosis, just kind of contraception, if you're just trying to find a contraception that works for you. We do some kind of, we don't do IVF, but we do some sort of the fertility kind of workups and things like that. Early menopause, if people have had a very early menopause, either through operation or through you know other medical conditions. So we offer a free discovery call, which we do like a 5-minute chat just to kind of find out where you're at and then talk to you about, you know, what might be best suited to you. The reason why we do that often is because if we think you're going to need to have any investigations, like say we thought you had polycystic ovary syndrome, you know, the way that we diagnose that is with an ultrasound scan and some blood tests. If we book that for you as a package, that then includes a follow-up appointment. So to save you paying for two appointments necessarily, you know, we try and make it as efficient for you as possible. Our appointments are all half an hour long, so you can know that you're going to come in and you're not going to be rushed, that you're going to have proper time with us to talk through things. We've got a good range of appointments, weekends, evenings, and in the daytime. And when you come in and see us, we will put together a plan. You will get a tailored plan back to you, but we also, with your consent, share that plan with your GP. So like I said, we can help advocate for you, you know, about changes around medication. And sometimes somebody will only need to come and see us once and we can get them back on the right track, and then their GP is great and the GP will take over. Other people will come and see us sort of more regularly or as things happen. So that's where you can find me. And say you're also really passionate about, you know, menopause education events. So we've got a menopause coffee morning coming up on the 11th of March in Cheltenham at the Corner Coffee Company on Bath Road, myself and Joan, the Holistic Core Physio. And that's going to be really informal. Just drop in, have a coffee, you know, have a chat with us about, you know, what problems you're having, and, you know, talk about some kind of options.
11th of October.
Between 2 to 4, I'll send you the link for it.
So 11th of October, Bath Road at
the Corner Coffee Company.
So
they've been really generous and have let us have a little corner of the cafe so that people can just drop in, and, you know, because we know that Saturdays are busy with kids and activities and stuff. But, you know, previously when we've done education events, they've been a bit more formal and things, and in the evening. And I think, you know, feedback for that has been really good, but not everybody's got that option. And actually, you know, trying this is for menopause month is October. So, and the big focus actually this year for menopause month is lifestyle, which I'm really pleased.
Me too.
And I think, you know, absolutely we mustn't lose sight of it in all of it. So yeah, so come, if you're in Cheltenham and around that day, come pop in and see us, or book a discovery call with me and we can talk about what we can do to help.
I'll put all the links in the show notes and on the Instagram page as well, so we can share all of that. And obviously if anybody wants to know any more, they can DM me and I can forward you to them. You've also got your own Instagram page, which is,
I think it's just Dr. Nikki Wilson.
It's brilliant, actually. There's so much on there, and go and give Nikki a follow, definitely. Your knowledge is incredible.
I could just talk about it all day.
Yeah, but we could though, couldn't we? I mean, the subject, when we were off pod making another drink, we were chatting about all sorts of different things. So the next one that you're going to come back and do for us very kindly, and I do appreciate your time.
I appreciate coming.
You are incredible, and I'm sure, you know, the listeners will agree. But the next one is going to be on sex and libido, isn't it? it. So this is, I mean, you and I were talking about this fascinating subject that nobody really thinks is, you know, something that should be spoken about.
We're too British about it, aren't we?
Yeah, but we're not going to be British about it. We're going to be very liberal about it, and we're going to talk all things sex and libido. So I can't wait for that. And then later on again, you're coming back, and we're going to do all about the life of a GP, aren't we? So lots to come from Nikki. Thank you so much for having me.
I really, really enjoyed it. Thank you.
And we will hopefully send some people your way. Myself, I just don't book yet because I'm going first. Oh, thanks, Nikki.